Episode 65 of The Rule of Three, Tim Slagle, Brian Miller, two comics, three topics, 10 minutes each, the perfect podcast for your modern lifestyle. We're going to be talking about a celebrity experience that Brian had.
It sounds like I paid for a screech for prostitution or something. I had a celebrity experience.
I don't know how else to tease it without just blurting it out.
No, that was good. So, I just realized I didn't want anyone to think that I paid for screech sex.
Well, paid, yes.
I can get that for free.
Yeah, exactly.
We know the same people.
We're also going to be talking about a TV show that Brian has become very enamored with on HBO. I don't know what you would call that now. Stream, a cable show, a TV show?
I watched it on a TV show?
TV series?
Yeah, it's actually, it's an Italian show that HBO is dribbling out into America.
Huh. It's actually Italian?
Oh, yeah. Very much so. The whole thing is written and directed by an Italian guy.
Well, let's not belabor that.
Let's not overtease.
Let's not overtease. You're right. We got a topic up front. Is if you've been paying attention to the news at all, you know that last night Donald Trump announced his Supreme Court pick. And I don't even know if I can say his name right. Gorsuch, is that?
Yeah, Gorsuch, Gorsuch.
It's.
I mean, we'll learn.
I already know that it will probably all over Facebook will be Gorsuch.
Sure. And, but I remember when Sotomayor first got named, I remember reading it in the paper for 3 days and you're just like, what? How do you pronounce that? And then at some point you're just like, oh yeah, Sotomayor. Any name that sounds unfamiliar or strange right away, it's funny how fast you can get used to it. And the main one I'm thinking of is, because I watch football. You see these insane names that you would never, if you read it on a seating chart, you'd be like, what's that? And then, like a week later, you're like, ooh, I.K. Nkampale just laid a vicious hit on Ha-Ha Clinton Dix. And it seems totally normal, so I'm sure we'll be used to whatever Gorsuch is. It will be second nature to us in a couple of weeks.
What's funny to me is that NPR insists on pronouncing some things differently. Have you noticed that?
They tend to really hit anybody who has any kind of ethnic pronunciation.
Right, they try to say it the way it would be said in the country.
Yes, exactly. They throw in the Spanish trill or something.
Sylvia Pagioli.
Yeah. No, they absolutely do. They definitely.
But what's really funny about that is that I knew that Barack Obama was an avid NPR listener, because when he started talking about what everyone else in the country called Pakistan, he called it Pakistan, and that is the NPR pronunciation of that country.
No, you're right about that. It's always But anyway,
it's almost a snobbish elitism that they do it with too. It's almost snide. It's like I'm saying, you I grew up being called Pagioli. No, it's Pagioli.
It's almost like you've got a grudge against NPR or something.
Maybe.
But so you were asking me earlier. You said, "What do I think of the pick?" And I don't know a ton about it. Just because I haven't, basically last night, the short version, my wife was in the hospital yesterday for a little bit. She's fine. But the last thing I wanted to do was come home and do my news homework after all that crap. So I just watched I watched The Simpsons and I watched the thing we'll talk about in segment two. But so I haven't looked much about the guy, but I, my immediate reaction is at least it wasn't Judge Judy. this is one of the first people he's picked that actually seems, as far as I can tell, to be qualified for the job. I don't know if this was an attempt at a nod or a kind of screw you, but I believe he clerked for Merrick Garland, if I'm not mistaken.
I did not see that. I saw that he clerked for Kennedy. I didn't see that he clerked for Merrick Garland.
I thought he worked with Garland as well, but I could be wrong.
Interesting.
Yeah, but he's definitely pretty far to the right. He's filling in a seat that was pretty far to the right that was obstructed by somebody who would have put somebody in the middle left, I would say.
I don't know if they would have.
Oh, I think it would be hilarious. Honestly, I think it would be hilarious if the Democrats just never put this through and this seat remained empty the whole time.
That's not going to happen.
I know, because they're cowards, but that's what they should do.
No, they're going to try. Oh, gosh, no, they're going to try. But here's the deal, is that Harry Reid broke the filibuster rule in order to get Barack Obama's judicial nominations through. He suspended the filibuster rule on federal judges.
Oh, well, there you go. The end.
And he announced that when Hillary wins, and if we take the Senate, we will suspend the filibuster rule for Supreme Court justices because we don't want Republicans slowing this down any longer than they already have.
Oh, I honestly wouldn't be surprised if Republicans suspend the filibuster altogether within the next couple of months. I mean, that'll be one of the essential steps on the path to autocracy.
Well, I don't know about that.
I can see. Here's the thing. I got to get
getting
these
off topic.
No, we're not. By the way, really quick. Here's what I've been right about everything for so long now that I'm having to record things individually so I can go back to point them out to people. So real quick, I want to throw in a pitch. In the next year, let's see if we repeal the Trump repealed the Magnitsky Act. My prediction is within the next 6 months to a year, Trump will absolutely try to repeal the Magnitsky Act, and it'll be interesting to see if he tries to do it through an executive order or without Congress, because so many Republican congressmen were in favor of it initially, and Democrats were actually kind of against it, even though that was screwed up. So, just
I don't even know the Magnitsky Act.
It freezes the assets of Russians who are involved in essentially attempted political assassinations.
Aha. Okay.
It's Putin's number one thing that he wants repealed. He hates it so much. So, yeah.
Huh. I didn't even know there was a Magnitsky Act.
They're going to hope that stays that way so when they repeal it, nobody notices it.
It is interesting. What I got a kick out of, well, first of all, the reason why he did pick the justice was because he submitted a list of 21 judges that he said these would be my Supreme Court picks before he was elected. And that was one of the things he ran on. And a lot of people voted for him. People wondered why the evangelicals, why they would vote for someone who obviously lives such an unchristian lifestyle as Donald Trump. And the bottom line was is that they liked his possible Supreme Court picks.
Yeah, he was throwing him a bone with that. I wonder how many abortions Donald Trump has paid for. Over under three. Over or under. But seriously, over or under, what do you think?
Oh, over three. Or under three? I think you're probably right about that. Right about on. Well, no, I don't think, you know what? I don't even think he dealt with it.
I'm
pretty sure he had people for it.
Right.
I'm pretty sure he just, he actually had a department.
I'm not saying he like signed the check and wrote in the memo or anything.
So the interesting thing for me was the reality show aspect of the Supreme Court pick.
Of course. I'm surprised Donald Trump didn't swing the microphone around by the cord before he announced him.
It was, first of all, we knew we had a list of 21 to work with. So it's like 21 bachelorettes to start.
Of course.
With. And then he said, 8 o'clock Tuesday, tune in. We're going to have the final announcement. And from what I understand, I'm not sure if I have the judge's name right. The other judge that was being considered, I think, was Harrigan.
Mm-hmm. And he was there.
Yes, he was. They flew him out. So the two of them were in the audience waiting. So it's down to two.
See,
which
sometimes
one?
You see something and you go, that's a Steve Bannon moment. And sometimes you see things and you go, that's a Donald Trump moment. And this was a Donald Trump moment.
Absolutely.
This
so,
was
yeah.
the grotesquerie that is wrapped around the rock.
You know what? I don't know. It's where America is right now. America loves reality TV. America loves celebrity. I mean, there's no denying it. And
oh, so let's push the country in the wrong direction as hard as we can. It's a horrible idea.
Well,
it's a horrible idea.
The thing
and
is,
it plays
the
into
thing
his
is,
mania.
Though,
it's not about reality TV. It's not about the people. It's about him. He literally wanted to see what kind of ratings he could get. That's still all he thinks about.
Sure.
He's a crazy person.
Even if you are correct on that, the plus side is people paid attention to the Supreme Court nominee, something that probably most people don't even think twice about. People watched it. He made it into a television event. And if you want more people to participate in government, you need to do it. You need to approach it on there. You need to speak their language. And I think it's a good thing that...
Spoiler alert, Donald Trump is not going to try to get more people to participate in government. And speaking of participating, we got to go participate in the next segment. So we got to finish this one up. And here on the second segment of Rule of Three, next on the third segment now, we'll talk a little celebrity encounters. I like that now. It sounds like a Cinemax show. celebrity encounters. Before that, there's a show that I'm very much into that it sounds like Tim has some strong feelings about, having not seen it. I'm all about the Young Pope. I'm hooked on the Young Pope. You could say I'm a convert to the Young Pope. Loving the Young Pope. Sure. So now you seem opposed to the Young Pope from afar.
Yeah, but you said something in the you said something in the first segment. You said that I did not realize it's an entirely Italian. It's an Italian production.
Yes, it's directed by a guy named Paolo Sorrentino, who did a movie called The Great Beauty, which is quite good. It's a Fellini-esque.
Oh my gosh, yes.
And so this is not. I thought when I saw the ads that it was basically somebody was like, what if we did Breaking Bad with the Pope, you know, where it was just basically the simplistic idea of...
Yeah, that's what the trailer looks like.
And, I mean, and now there... I can tell you several
things
about...
We're going to sell blue Catholicism.
It's
a new refined Catholicism that's 99.97% pure.
Well, first off, it's... What's crazy is that the show was released in Italy months ago, and so it was in production long time ago, and it is the most prescient entertainment released in the Trump era right now. It's about a young guy. Well, that's the one big difference, a young guy. But it's about an American cardinal who, during a papal, you know, conclave, they're all debating. Nobody can decide which one of the old guard they want to be the Pope. And so they make this young guy the Pope, thinking, oh, he's a handsome guy. He'll be a puppet. And when he gets in there, he turns out to be conservative in ways that they never would have imagined, and also not conservative in ways that they never would have imagined. And he's kind of a wild card, and it's about how he's shaking up the Catholic Church. And it's intense and weird and surrealist, and it just doesn't pick the easy... You know, it just doesn't pick the easy, oh, he's a villain, he's a good guy. Kind of everyone's
right,
sort
right.
of villainous.
A sympathetic villain. To me, it looked like Tony Soprano as the Pope. It had that feeling. And what I didn't like about it from the trailer is exactly what you said, what it looked like. It looked like here we are again. This is the corruption that's rife through the Catholic Church. This is what really goes on in the Catholic Church. And... I'm kind of tired of that.
I'll tell you, it is what makes it so interesting, and what I think makes it so worth watching, is that Sorrentino is in no way attempting to make a realist statement about the Catholic Church. This is very much it's not a fantasy version of it by any stretch, but things happen in that show that are definitively surrealistic. Either supernatural or by like cinematically stylistic. Fellini is a big influence on him. And so
right.
it's this kind of cartoonish Vatican. Like put it this way. There's zero subplot or cheeky references to like young boys. Like they haven't come near that topic.
Wow. I thought that was going to be all over.
No, I mean, they acknowledge that some of the priests are gay, but they do it in a really sympathetic way. And it's not like the priests are all sleeping with each other. It's actually that the young pope is very anti-gay in ways that people were not expecting. It's not the show that you expect it to be. It's not just the, you know, Catholic, anti, sort of lapsed Catholic / anti-Catholic, you know, porn, as it were. There's very little sex in it. And the sex that's in it is not pleasant, and it's not it's for very specific, really interesting reasons.
No, that's okay. Don't give it away. It's yes, you have convinced me that maybe I should take a look at it.
it takes a couple episodes to get going, but I really like kind of Italian surrealism anyway. And it's just, it moves at a really slow, weird, interesting pace, and it's just kind of beautiful. And then every now and then there'll be these modern intrusions that are really fascinating. Jude Law
is
like,
is it subtitled, or is it one of those half subtitled where it's half Italian, subtitled. Half English, and so yeah. So half of it's subtitled. It's I think it was why is it eluding me? Lilyhammer was first show that they actually co-produced between two countries, between the America and two countries, and what they did was really clever there. They did half the dialogue in English and half the dialogue in Norwegian, so that neither country would say, there's just so many subtitles, because only half the show's in subtitles. It's a really nice compromise that I've seen a lot, so it's done like that as well.
Yeah, because the Pope is American, and so he sort of speaks English in casual conversation, even amongst the Italian guys, but he conducts all his business in Italian, and then, of course, when the Italian guys are by themselves, they all speak in Italian.
No Latin?
There's Latin, there's Italian, but he conducts kind of all the papal business in Italian. It is something else. I really can't overstate it. It's simultaneously petty and small and dark, and then big and expansive and foreboding. It's just great. It really is it's the show for the Trump era. It's kind of about unpredictability and authoritarian overreach. What's great is I really don't think the guy Sorrentino really clearly wasn't thinking about that. It just, these parallels are happening, and that's nice, because otherwise I think it would be less interesting if it was all this on the nose comparisons. Whereas the Pope here's interests are definitely his own.
Right.
And Jude Law is great, by the way. He meets with this female prime minister, and the first thing he says to her is, "I understand that I'm alarmingly handsome, but let's try to get past that." I mean, like, you hate the guy, but the Pope is pretty awesome in his awfulness. But yeah, it's an interesting show, and I think if it wasn't Italian, I would have actually been less interested in it, because, like, I feel like it's like more their thing to talk about.
Yeah, no, I didn't. I did not know that. I assumed that it was another Hollywood production, and the way it looked, and the way it, you know, the trailer misrepresents it entirely. They make it seem like it's something else, which I guess you would have to do with a show like that, is try to get people interested in it for another reason. And then, you know, for instance, The Sopranos, when that came out, I thought it was going to kind of be a sitcom. I had no idea that it was going to be an extended length Goodfellas. I did not know that about the show. I thought it was going to be which in itself I think would be a funny show.
This the sitcom basically.
Yeah, exactly.
You're right. That would work as a sitcom for sure.
That's what I thought it was. That's what I thought it was going to be, and then it turned out it was absolutely nothing of the sort. It was, and apparently that's what they're doing with this one as well.
It's kind of the conundrum of any unique entertainment is that there's no pre-existing way to sell a unique piece of entertainment or art.
Which is probably why it had to be made in Italy.
Yeah, and it might, it's what's interesting to me is you always wonder, like, does this seem less weird in Italy? I think we've hit on this before a little bit, but like different cultures have different tropes in their art. So like it's not weird in, say, a Bollywood production to have some really high drama and some really slapsticky comedy and a musical number all in close proximity. Whereas to us, that would be this aesthetic choice, right?
Yeah.
And so it makes me wonder, just because I'm not overly familiar with Italian cinema, that like, how much of this is standard issue Italian weirdness and how much of it is Sorrentino's specific Sorrentino weirdness?
Well, it seems that everything that comes out of Italy is like that, but maybe that's just the stuff that we get to see out of Italy. Maybe there is Italian films that we would not be interested in. They're like Mexican comedies.
Yeah, it is like it's like the house we have a certain preference for like a house style We like the Italian surrealist stuff particularly or whatever. That's interesting. That might be it. And he's undeniably just a really lush, beautiful filmmaker. And so these like opulent Vatican settings are, really rife for somebody who wants to play with composition and color.
What did he do? What did he do? What do you think he did? I'm sure the Vatican didn't give him permission to film.
No, I wonder, they must have built these sets and maybe some of them are CG.
Yeah, probably would have to be CGI.
It actually reminds me, we'll close it off with a great line I read in a book I'm reading called The Recognitions by Gaddis. And the guy says to a woman, I didn't even realize you were religious, but you've got the poster of the cardinal in the corner there. And she says, no, I just thought that area needed a splash of red. So
How about a splash of music?
Yes, and then celebrity encounters. I took a hard look at myself and found me charming and cool as hell. But they seemed to disagree, and who could understand? I'm just a middleman, a chicken pot, a Superman. And on the final segment of Rule of Three. I just realized the only downside of this segment is it's going to sound like a weird humble braggy thing, but
get ready, cover your ears because there's going to be a name dropped here.
Oh man, yeah, when this name drops, it's going to thud and roll around. I went to your favorite place in mine, Acme Comedy Company, over the weekend to see Cy Amundsen. I went to a couple of his shows and. Saturday Late Show, and I went down to see the show, and Cy's eyes were rather large when I saw him in the lobby, and he walked over and he just said, "Just to let you know, we're not telling people about this, so just keep it cool." And I said, "Okay," and then he moves to the side, and there, standing at the bar hanging out, is Brian Regan.
Oh my gosh!
Which it's funny. Well, what's interesting is, to a fairly large number of people, that means nothing.
But within the comedy industry, it's
Kim Kardashian to if you're just into celebrities, right?
Yeah,
in a weird way. Like,
no, I was gonna go bigger. It was, but I can't remember that. I was trying to remember that biblical word that's going to happen at the end of times when Christ comes back.
Oh, like Revelation or whatever?
No, there's another word for it. When everyone's brought into
rapture,
not the rapture.
Yes. Ah, yes, yes, yes. No, well, he'll definitely get in. He's a nice guy. Regan actually, in a way, I think, has one of the most amazing careers in that. He's not a household name, even though it's sort of astonishing to me that he's not a household name, considering he probably is the best, most broadly appealing comedian I think I've ever seen.
He is, and you probably don't remember this because you probably know him more from his Tonight Show appearances, but he is the Jay Leno of the era.
Yeah, from Jay back in the day when Jay was basically famous for nothing other than being the best stand-up that everybody liked, right?
Yep, absolutely. From comics to club owners,
right? Nobody doesn't like Brian Regan,
right? Our friend once told me, because I asked him, I said, "Why was Jay Leno so big? I mean, he was every week coming to a club and he was like a celebrity billing." And I said, "Why was he so popular?" And our friend said, "Well, it's pretty obvious. He'd come in, he'd do the show, he wouldn't get drunk, he'd stay away from the staff, and he'd pick up the money and leave. He'd show up on time. It was just he did the job.
He treated it like a business in an era when a lot of people were. It was a one yes. giant Coke party, right?
Yes, absolutely. It was. He was. He was one week that you didn't have to worry. He sold tickets. He did the show." He was pleasant.
He had new material every time, and it crushed.
Right.
Also,
yep. That as well. And that's I think, and every comic looked up to him. Every comic said that, you know, that was what they aspired to. And that's, I kind of think where Brian Regan is now.
Yeah. The only downside being of sort of a fan of Regan is that being as funny as he is so difficult, but doing it and still being that clean – and not being self-consciously clean is quite the magic trick, I think. But a great. So what was interesting is at the we were just at the bar at the, you know, at a table, and at the late show it emptied out. So you have 250 to 300 serious comedy fans coming out of this club, all walking past him. Almost nobody noticed him, except for like maybe three or four people. And those people lost their minds. You know, they're like, what in the hell is going on? Is this Brian Regan?
So he didn't do a set. He had no interest in.
No, he had done a show at the Orpheum. And what was really great, actually, was in addition to this, is his brother Dennis was opening for him. And his brother Dennis is a fantastic comedian. I was saying that the only reason that people say Dennis is Brian's brother is that Brian is so big that it's, you know, it's like being Michael Jordan's brother, but you're Scottie Pippen.
Uh-huh.
What are you going to do? I mean, he's Michael Jordan, but oh my gosh, you know, Dennis is so good. And Dennis and I are friends from a festival. And so I hadn't seen him in a while. So it was great to see Dennis. And those guys together are very, very funny. This is watching two brothers who are hilarious kind of do bits. Huh. Not like bits where you're like, just natural stuff. Like, we goof around, and this is our, you know.
Right.
This is our goofing. And it was great. They were so funny.
Right. What it reminds me of is Chicago comic Dwayne Kennedy has a bit. Where he said, it must be really hard to be Jesus Christ's brother. Because no matter what you do, you know, you could be a manager of KFC and come home and go, well, did you see what your brother did today?
I can hear Dwayne telling that too.
So that's exactly, it must be hard to be the brother of someone that's so respected in the industry and want to stay in the industry, want to actually do the same thing. I mean, that's
And Dennis is very difficult. Chill about it. Dennis is a really truly laid back guy. He's great. He was telling me he didn't start comedy till he was 33. That's pretty late.
Yeah. Yeah, but then again, it also is a good time.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you kind of have your head on squarely. It's I think a lot of young people maybe are starting it too soon.
Yeah, I think, you know, in certain ways I get frustrated that I didn't start a little sooner, because it would have been nice to have a little, you know, it would be nice to have a few extra years to try to ride the, you know, the youth vibe way, you know, way if you only get one chance to be the new young thing. Boy, I think having had a real job for 3 or 4 years before that, or kind of a real job, was very helpful.
Yeah, I think I think that's one thing that's a void that I have in my life, is that I don't really have any life experiences. I've spent very little time as a civilian.
And, yeah, that's true. Because when did you start?
I was 21.
Wow. And but so back then, though, also, you were probably working pretty steady by 23, right?
Oh, yeah. I was pro by 23.
Yeah, because that's when you could make feature money that was, like, actual money, right?
Oh, MC money. MC money that paid – MC gigs that paid better than headline gigs now. It was absolutely unbelievable. It was a big wave that built up, and I just happened to be right in front of it. So I was able – I didn't have to paddle into that wave. That wave took me up. So it was wonderful. But, yeah, but I don't – you know, it's – don't you hate it when, you know, when you're sleeping off a drunk and
– You know when you oversleep you get your third up, alarm you get, and you miss Denny's breakfast?
Exactly.
I mean, you can still go to IHOP, but it's not the same.
Yeah, I have very little, unfortunately, life experience in common with most of the audience. So, well, not anymore, because they're all comics anymore. That's the only people that go to comedy shows are comics that are hoping they can get on for 5 minutes.
That's so true. It's like, I think every book is bought by somebody who's writing a book.
I It was when I started in comedy, man. It was really cool that people would say, "Oh, you're a comedian? I've never met a comedian before." And now it's like, "Oh yeah, my brother did that for a while."
Yep. Oh my God, I get that so often. Yeah. No. Oh, it's, nobody's impressed. Impressed.
And it's said with a sneer. Yeah, my brother that's still living at home, who you know doesn't want to work. Did that for
and he
a while.
Dragged me out to some horrible open mic where I had to watch him talk about awful things for 4.5 excruciating minutes.
And then have guys who haven't showered for a week hit on me. Yep. Oh my God, it was horrible.
Yep, that's pretty much it. But no, it was, you know, they always say don't meet your heroes. But I have actually had mostly good luck with that. I've only met a couple of people that I was like really that dazed by. And Dave Chappelle was really cool to me. I met Stephen Wright and got to hang out with him for a little bit, and he was exactly what you wanted him to be. And just the same, Regan was exactly what you would want. Just a really friendly, funny, nice guy who just wants to have a good time and just totally, you know, unpretentious isn't even the right word, but just like not, you know, he didn't have to really be the center of attention. He was just one of the goofs goofing around, and he liked when other people goofed right back to him.
Sure. Sure. He loved the hang.
He's a good laugher, you know, which is not something you can always say about comics. But
no,
he's a really good laugher.
If you're cracking up a comic, he'll say that's a good joke.
Right.
That's fun. How late did he stay?
Oh boy, I think we were there till bar close. Till 2?
No, it's 1.
Well, legal bar close, not we're tired of.
Oh, okay,
you know.
Okay. He did a little after hours.
It was everybody kind of did last call, and then there was just a little bit of water drinking on everybody's part for about 15 minutes. It was a long goodbye. A lot of water. A lot of I forgot my coat. But everybody kind of went out with last call because he just done a huge show for 2,500 people, and then they the tour bus pulled away, and you know he drove off in a massive tour bus. But yeah. Just a great guy. It was it's reassuring to know that. Like I said,
I'm sorry. That's kind of funny.
Huh?
It's most people grab a cab back to the hotel.
No, their bus was parked right out there. I mean, it's a giant coach
bus. Yeah, no, that's
the size
what I mean. That's really funny. That's oh my God, you think parking's bad for a car?
Yeah. Jacob Fry is really going to have a heart attack when he finds out we got to accommodate this thing.
And speaking of accommodating, we're out of time on this one.
Yes. We'll be back next week though with a hot Super Bowl wrap up.
Yeah, we're going to do we're teasing next week already. We're going to do Super Bowl wrap up. All the episodes timslegel.com, iTunes.
And real Brian Miller on Twitter, and the episodes at BrianMillerComedy.com. And if you're listening to this before the Super Bowl, I will be in Boise, Idaho, Wicked Laughs, including during the Super Bowl. Actually, right afterwards, I figured that out. Because of the time difference, I should be going on stage. Super Bowl should be just the ending. So, perfect time to come down and finish off the Super Bowl party with little Brian Miller and Wicked Laughs in Boise, Idaho. Thursday,
Happy Super Bowl, everybody.
Yes, happy Super Bowl. See you next week.